Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
All right, welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And we're going to do a show that was recommended by a patron here in a little bit. First, I wanted to talk about some of the stuff that's been happening tonight. You guys have witnessed at least one of these things sort of at a distance. So earlier today, I went walking out of this room here. And between my room and the kitchen, there's sort of an entranceway, part pantry, part bookshelves type of area. And up on one of the shelves is a heavy cast iron grinder for like tomatoes to make tomato sauce out of. It's very old. And out of the blue, it just fell off the shelf and landed with a thud on the floor. Now, the floor doesn't shake or anything, so my walking through the room should not have dislodged it. Plus, it's cast iron, so it's pretty heavy. So I was I have the satellite radio on in my main room a lot of the times, and I had earlier been listening to Budgie. Because I turn it up when something I like comes on. Budgie came on, and then Fastway was on. I was like, okay, that's fine. And then AC/DC came on. I'm not really a big AC/DC fan, so I muted it. And then I left the room, and this thing fell. And a few seconds later, the stereo turns itself back on and cranks up, still playing AC/DC. And I was like, oh, that's loud. And I'm thinking, wait, no, I muted that. And I went back in, and it was incredibly loud. Like, it turned itself way up. And I muted it again and turned it down. And then I walked out of the room, and it turned itself back on again. So I was like, okay, great. And then finally I muted it again and turned it way down, and it stayed that way. So earlier when I initially connected with Josh to do the movie podcast that we recorded the first episode of tonight, as I'm talking to him, the switch on my microphone turned itself off. So suddenly he's going, I can't hear you. Are you there? And I'm like, I'm thinking it's Skype. And finally I went to turn my mic off and on, and when it's actually in a arm that covers the switch, so the switch cannot be accidentally hit. So I pulled the mic out from under the arm covering, and the microphone was off. And the same thing happened when we started this podcast with the three of you actually there. It just turned itself off.
And I know it may sound jokey, and I was sort of joking about it earlier, but like, and we've been having troubles with mic. we've been having some trouble with Mike's Skype connection, so it seems it's a theme for the night.
Yeah, also the fact that AC/DC is a heavy metal band, and your tomato grinder is also made of heavy metal.
No. Therefore, Archons. There we go.
I just assumed something was walking through the house playing with stuff.
Yeah, but you know, when you decide to do demons as a topic, you know, maybe that kind of stuff happens. A few nights ago, I was pulling some tarot cards from an old deck, and it has, you know, so it's not like the Rider-Waite-Smith deck that everybody knows. The numbered cards of the suits are just images, you know, and numbers, like, you know, three cups, four swords, whatever. So I just pulled three cards from the deck and laid them down, like, oh, and it took me a second. And then I went, oh, that's the six of coins, the six of swords, and the six of wands. And I had to laugh, you know, I mean, from a deck of 78 cards, that had never happened before. And I thought, well, isn't that cute? Like, are the cards joking with me, you know, or is there something deeper going on? There's a theme here, you know, there's a theme.
It was a preview of tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so tonight, what I did is, if you're a patron, you should have seen this notice that I wanted you guys to throw out questions. You can become a patron to the show, by the way, right off the website at wheredidtheroadgo.com. It's $3 a month. You get some extra content, some bonus stuff here and there, and stuff like this where I'm going to have you guys throw us some ideas for topics or questions to us. And we're going to do a show just for patrons, answering some of those more personal questions. But some of the topic things, like this one, we're going to do as actual shows because we have some really awesome patrons who have come up with some awesome questions for us. My God.
Yeah, great job, guys. Great job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This one from Megan says, what about the demonic? What I mean is a lot of movies, books, podcasts, etc. talk about demonic experiences along the lines of the belief that these type of experiences are caused by demons. What does the Roundtable think of the mainstream perception or portrayal of this type of reported phenomena?
Hmm, that's well, a big subject.
Yes, yeah. Yes, it is.
First of all, we should start by defining what a demon is.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, the term demon comes from the term daemon, D-A-I-M-O-N,
correct.
Which Patrick Harper, of course, wrote The Daemonic Reality, and that was more of a muse than anything sinister.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a personal spirit that we all have that sort of informs our personality and things. That's the Greek, Platonic, Socratic idea of a daemon. Yeah.
Yeah, the Greek word daemon means knowledge, but it was during the Middle Ages when the Catholic Church deemed that any kind of knowledge that wasn't sanctioned by them, was evil. Therefore, you know, the daemon, the knowledge of these entities became, you know, demonical. That's a mm-hmm. lack of a word.
Yeah, they were benign, you know.
Exactly.
Right. For the Greeks, they were just benign spirits, you know, mm-hmm. that we all possess.
Yeah.
And, you know, Christianity didn't like that, so it turned them into bad, naughty things.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'll go ahead and you go and then I'll go.
Okay, so that Mike is talking about this inner voice that we all possess, you know, and there's all obviously this cliched stereotype of the little devil that is on your left shoulder and the little angel that is on your right shoulder, you know, whispering, you know, things. And obviously, if the things they're whispering are sanctioned by the church, then that's the thing that the angel is advising. And if the things are not sanctioned by the church, then that's when you are listening to the demon on your left shoulder. So it's kind of like the way it goes.
No, absolutely, and I think that sort of the overarching theme that we're talking about right now as a whole is just this lack of subtlety, and this lack of being able to parse out what is demonic and what is not. It reminds me very much of the way that the adversary to heaven has been characterized in a lot of literature. Like, mm-hmm. believe it or not, there are some that will tell you that Satan, Lucifer, and the devil are three separate things.
Uh-huh.
I'm reminded mm-hmm. of a recent episode of Anon Bite with Gordon White. Surprise, 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 Josh is talking about Gordon White. where he mentions the fact that, especially with like things that are considered the devil, that was more of a trickster, impish, like, you know, oh, my cattle got out in the middle of the night. That was the devil, you know, that sort of thing. Which is something that I think in a lot of media is missing. Like, there's not... I feel like whenever demonic things come up in media, they tend to be deathly serious. Not to say that doesn't happen. In fact, it happens quite often. But I feel like a lot of media completely gets rid of the tricksterish quality and doubles down on the very, like, capital E evil stuff. The very, very scary stuff in a lot of media. And I don't think that's quite accurate. Like, sometimes demonic forces don't want to ruin your life. They just want to ruin your day, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or help you, perhaps, you know?
Yeah.
That's another facet as well.
I will mm-hmm. also like to point out this, you know, that how... we have discussed in previous podcasts how in this realm of the paranormal, this realm of the Fortean phenomena, we're always dealing with a lot of deception. You know, deception that comes from, I don't know, the intelligence behind the UFO phenomenon, you know. I think that it's pretty safe to say that we all four are very much against or very skeptical of the extraterrestrial hypothesis when it comes to trying to solve the UFO question. Even Preach. Though there's plenty of accounts of encounters with UFO occupants, UFO pilots, who plainly go and tell the witness that they come from Mars, or they come from, I don't know, Andromeda, or they come from the Pleiades and all of that. But I still think there's deception involved. And I also think that the same could be applied with alleged encounters with demonic entities. So what I'm trying to say here is just because there's some nasty incorporeal dude telling you that he is the devil incarnate, well, maybe you shouldn't believe it, you know.
Also, John Keel considered himself a demonologist, not necessarily a ufologist.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it sort of reminds me of, Miguel, in that sense is you know, you hear a lot about the ways that certain abductee researchers, alien abductee researchers, find cases, the cases that fit their worldview find them, you know, like, yeah. So Dave Jacobs is not going to talk about New Age sort of things. You know, on the other hand, somebody like Leo Stringfield is going to be a lot more, is going to find less cases that are into that sort of hybrid thing. So it sort of makes me wonder if, like, people who tend to have a religious outlook tend to, when they interact with the other, capital T, capital O, they'll interact with something that presents itself, or they will interpret it as being demonic. I would lean toward the fact that it would present itself as being demonic because it's a way for it to sort of get a toehold in.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, I mean, obviously there's a perspective based on your worldview.
Yeah.
But there's also, okay, so for example, this is an experience I had, which I think a lot of people would have called it demonic to a degree. It wasn't anything extreme. I had been taking a walk out of the back part of my property one night, and there was this black shadow on the ground. It was just kind of a globe of, it wasn't really a globe, it was almost like it was flat on the ground, but it was a dark shadow, and I could watch it move. And at some point, I got the impression it wanted to come into me. And me being me, I gave it permission to do that, because I figured this was probably my imagination. And
I felt the same way Soraya says.
You silly boy.
And so it did, and I didn't feel anything different. I didn't feel anything when it got to my, because it kind of got to my feet and disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
But over the next few weeks, I have a very strong moral compass. And over the next few weeks, I found that moral compass kind of being challenged, like, well, why shouldn't I do this? Or why shouldn't I do that? And that bugged me. And at one point I went, why am I thinking like this? This is not me. And then I remembered the shadow, and I went back out that night, and I told it to get out. And I watched it shoot from my feet across the yard, just kind of stay there for a bit, and then dart off into the field.
Mm-hmm.
And then that stopped. So it's perfectly understandable that somebody would say, well, you were possessed by a demon. But A, the thing wasn't telling me what to do. I didn't even know it. It was almost, I mean, almost in the sense of like Satan being a tempter. You know, it was kind of going, well, why not do this? And it was kind of testing me, testing my moral compass. And when I walk away from it, I say, well, it made me stronger. So is it really evil if its whole point was to strengthen my moral compass?
It's like a spiritual version of the Hegelian dialectic, you know, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. You know, it's like it existed to oppose you, to strengthen you. Yeah, it's an interesting sort of thing. But on the surface, it totally does sound like you're ridden for a certain amount of time by something.
Right, right. And it didn't do anything horrible to me. You know, my head wasn't spinning in circles. I wasn't spitting blood anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know it was there. I had forgotten all about it until I started thinking back, like, why am I thinking like this? This is not how I normally view things. Wait a minute, there was that shadow. Could that have something to do with it?
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a weakling demon.
Maybe.
Or maybe you were just a very strong person.
Yeah. Soraya was the training wheels.
Yes, there we go. But the thing
you got Steve from level like 19, who's like, I'm just a beginner demon. I'm just trying it out in Shirai Ashcast. Just gonna try it.
But the point is it evil if it's really in the end helping you? I mean, from a short perspective, you could say, well, it was evil because it was kind of pushing your moral compass in a bad direction. But in the end, it strengthened that moral compass. So, what was its intent in the first place? We don't know because I can't even tell you what it was. It was a dark shadow on the ground. I mean, it was very clear. It was right in front of me. It wasn't one of those corner of your eye things.
Well, I would suspect that if it's anything like the rest of the world, like good and evil are on a certain spectrum. You know, right. It's not you don't have heterosexuals and homosexuals. You have people on this sliding scale. You know.
Yep.
Everybody like everybody is on that sort of sliding scale and finds themselves somewhere in between. But or even off the scale.
I could also say that somehow I projected that out there in order to strengthen myself, although unconsciously, you know, maybe it's something that originated in me and just projected itself as an exterior and then did that to strengthen my moral compass, you know.
And if you were possessed, that was like the easiest exorcism ever.
Exactly. Like, get out. Oh, there it goes.
Yeah. Okay.
you had a British demon. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry.
Pardon me, good sir.
Exactly.
In contrast to that, I mean, the closest thing I've ever felt to evil was, and I talked about it on my original show with Soraya, is my sleep paralysis incident.
Yeah.
And if you talk to people, we talked about that on the show as well, the episode on sleep paralysis, which was fantastic, I thought. And when you talk to people who meet these entities when they're having sleep paralysis, they are undeniably demonic in the, you know, the Christian, these things are going to eat your soul mode. And that's exactly what this thing felt like. And I really hope I never encounter anything like that again or imagine anything that terrifying again. And it left a six-fingered handprint on my chest. So it left me a little calling card that's to this day is the, you know, one of the strangest things that's ever happened. So that felt utterly demonic in the most negative way possible. So maybe the thing that got in you, Soraya, if it was a spirit or an entity or something, maybe, like, you know, like we've discussed, maybe there is a sliding scale of these things. Maybe it was just an impish little shadow, whereas maybe there are spirits or entities that are more powerful and that are malign. I don't know.
Although not to be pedantic or fundamentalist about it, but I think the fact that it was six fingers is sort of interesting in and of itself.
What you're mentioning earlier. What is it with you in the six, Mike?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Ooh. I don't know. It's food for thought for sure. All I know is I've never felt anything that scared me that much before. As that thing did.
Now, you also have, I think, like, so you'll watch something like a movie about poltergeists, and the poltergeists always become demons, when in reality, parapsychologists have essentially proved that poltergeists are usually psychokinetic phenomena from someone who's involved in the poltergeist encounter.
Right.
So the media,
I don't know if it's being proved, but it's
more likely. I mean, it's hard to prove that without being able to prove psychokinetic how it works psychokinetically.
Or it could be, you know, you could maybe also throw the theory that there's entities that are using the energy that is available from, you know, these youths are going through these changes and this turmoil, and are using that energy to fuel, you know, their little, you know, pranks.
Okay,
that's my out of the box RPG thinking. Yeah, but and to sort of like add on to that, add an extra wing to that house. I think that sometimes it's purely psychokinetic, psychological energy focused around a person. I think sometimes it's an entity using that, and sometimes I think it's centered around a person plus an entity, like sort of comes in and sort of uses that as a foundation to do other stuff as well. But yeah, but the fact remains that it's definitely tied to psychology in some sense. I think that's pretty much a given the research that's out there.
But my point is, like, when it hits the theaters in that form or on television, it's a demon. There's no talk of the subtlety of psychokinetic stuff or anything like that. And why? Because it's something that is ingrained into our culture that frightens us, and it sells.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, even Poltergeist, the film Poltergeist, was about what could more or less be considered demonic activity. I mean, it was centered around sort of in this Indian burial ground, but the thing on the other side was the beast. Like, it's still invoked demonic imagery and demonic, you know, context.
Mm-hmm. Do any of you guys read Christopher Knowles' Secret Sun blog?
No.
By any chance?
I used to be a huge fan of him. Yeah.
He's been doing a great series on sort of the resurgence of this, the exorcism and the demonic themes in popular culture.
Yeah.
And we're seeing a big uptick in that. I think it sort of follows the whole recycling of a lot of 90s material, like, you know, 80s and 90s material with Stranger Things and other cultural themes that are bubbling to the surface again after a while. And it's perfectly indicated by the new Exorcist TV show, which I haven't seen. And a great book I read, Paul Tremblay's Head Full of Ghosts, which I recommend to people out there. One of the best horror novels I've read in a while. And the premise is that there's an exorcism taking place, but it turns into a reality TV show.
Sure.
The film crew comes in and sets up to film the exorcism. Really kind of great, brilliant conceit. Well done. But there's just this, maybe it's a cyclical thing, but suddenly there's all this exorcism and demon stuff percolating in popular culture. And I always wonder why these things rise to the surface again, if it's tied to social things happening more broadly, or if it's just a cycle and this stuff, it gets big, it dies out, and then it comes around again.
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because the 90s were all about... Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, as a former Catholic, you know, I'm still following, you know, like what's happening in the Catholic Church, and there's definitely been some kind of resurgence of exorcisms, you know, to the point that the church was worried that they needed to train more exorcists, you know, to try to meet the new like demonic demand that was happening in the market, you know. It's interesting. Even the new Pope, you know, was one of the first things he did was something that was kind of like hailed as some form of exorcism. You know, there was this like guy on a wheelchair or something that they said that he was possessed by demons, and you know, this Pope Francis like he laid his hands on his head, you know, and the guy kind of like jerked out and something, and they say, oh my God, you know, Pope Francis performed an exorcism. Then the Vatican said, no, he just prayed for this man's health. But anyway, the idea is that, yeah, the Catholic Church definitely is claiming that there's been an increase in demonic possessions.
But is that in response to the uptick in the media about it, which has made it a more viable explanation when something weird happens to someone?
Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of a more of a cultural reaction in a lot of ways. I mean, like, you look at the 90s, and the 90s were all about conspiracy and the, you know, the ETH, and like things are kind of okay, but like we can fix them and make them even better by combating forces on Earth. And I feel like a lot of the expression in the teens that we're seeing is that the planet is done. Like, I think that everybody on both sides of the aisle kind of feel like the planet is done. Like, is there some other place that we can seek some refuge and solicit some help from? And in looking towards the spiritual, which I think there's been a big uptick in the past couple of years of the spiritual, with that comes the idea that there are negative forces in that domain that sort of interact with us as well. That's my own personal two cents.
Sure. Well, the 80s had the satanic panic.
Yes.
You know, I was in the midst of that as someone who played D&D and listen to heavy metal music and
you're gonna go to hell for that.
And that's part of this recycling cultural energy that's going on.
And does this feel that way? I mean, does it sort of have that sort of sensation?
Just the popular conceptions of in popular culture, popular media, seeing the resurgence of this, of demonolatry and exorcisms and things. It does feel similar to that. So maybe this is just a circle, a cycle that goes around. But it really does. And I do encourage people to check out that video of Pope Francis. Sure. It's fascinating to watch him walk up and put his hands on this, you know, this disabled kid. And it really seems like there's something strange happening there. You know, something out of the ordinary, a Pope just blessing someone. And there's a lot of, I know I was just reading in, there's been an uptick of exorcisms and exorcists in Mexico, red pills. Yeah. So maybe you can talk about that. And they tied it in with the growth of the Santa Muerte cult and things like that. And the church being afraid that people are worshiping these folk saints that they don't approve of. And so apparently a large number of exorcists have been sort of commissioned in Mexico. And yeah, do you know anything about that? Have you been noticed in the media if there's...
I know that Andrew Chestnut, who is a guy that friends in the Grey America blog and I had the great opportunity to interview, has been writing about it. And Soraya, you know, Andrew could make a fantastic guess for where did the road go. Yeah, there's definitely some kind of like a resurgence. And there's also... as of late, has been a trend of Catholic priests who have been kidnapped and had been executed by the organized crime. Mm-hmm. But there's also my own personal take on this whole thing, guys, is that we definitely seem to be living in a age when there is a big trend. And a big force toward conservatism, you know? And I feel that this trend toward conservatism, not only in morality and in religion, but also in politics, is a consequence of this, of the world, you know, that is changing so, so, so fast. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, get scared by it. They get scared by it, and they want to try to hold things, to make things go slower, you know. So there is this kind of like a push toward these the good old times, you know, where things were better, where there weren't these changes, you know, that scared people so much. So there's this trend to see things in a very manichaistic kind of way, you know, of portraying things in black and white, and trying to skewing the bigger gray palette that is in between. And that's why we see these trends in politics and saying, oh my God, it's, you know, it's demons against angels, it's ISIS against, you know, the West. It's, you know, the world going to hell, you know, in a handbasket. Yeah, I think maybe that's why there's this trend, you know, there's these reports of exorcisms and whatnot. It's because we are, maybe it's a natural response of the populace, of the collective unconscious, of feeling that things are going too fast and we are trying to go back to a slower, kinder, you know, calmer era.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
I think you've hit the nail on the head in a lot of respects. When things seem to be out of control, people want easy answers. They want easy solutions. And what's an easier thing to blame than, oh, the devil made them do it?
Exactly.
No, but I'm perceiving this more just as a societal, like, societal pumping of the brakes. Like, yeah. In keeping with Miguel's theme of, like, things spiraling out of control, like, I think there's two types of conservatism going on. There's a conservatism that is nostalgic and regressive, and there's a conservatism that is, can we slow down and think about all these things at the same time? You know?
Sure.
And I think, you know, personally, I would sort of identify myself with the latter, just in terms of, like, I mean, you look at what the internet, I mean, we're on an internet radio show right now, and or a radio show that, you know, is that has broadcast on the internet. But, like, the impact that the internet has had on commerce and the decimation, perhaps righteous in some respects, that it has had to things like the music industry, like retail. I mean, I think that that's these are all good things, but I think that these should be taken a day at a time. Because in the relative blink of an eye, the internet has completely, like, decimated journalism and the music industry and, like, a lot of different things. And again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm saying that, like, I think that some of the conservatism is a reaction to that drastic almost overnight sort of change.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, it's not like I'm condemning conservatism per se. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, I am against conservative trends that tend to, like, satanize or demonize minorities or groups that are used as scapegoats by political factions. But on the other hand, you know, I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings and J.R.R. Tolkien, and Tolkien was a big conservative. You know, he was a guy who advocated for going back to nature. You know, who's saying that, you know, that a green garden and taking a nap under a big old tree was greater than, you know, all the comforts that modern society is always trying to sell us. And you know what? I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, but part of it is our definition of these terms are broken. Like, it's that sort of conservatism is not the conservatism that you see nowadays. Like, the conservatism you see nowadays, it's like it's a backing of more policies that strip liberties and strip liberties of others. But you know, we sort of had a conversation about this off the air, but, like, I think that the real way to catharsis through all this is the hybridization of these two viewpoints, but it's not going to happen. Anyway, demons.
Back to demons. Well, you know,
I think it's,
but this is relevant to the talk of demons because it is a cultural interpretation of what might be a negative type of experience. But again, like I was saying before, like, if we look at it in the short term, it's a negative experience. But if it helps in the long term, was it really a negative experience?
Yeah.
I had a weird freaking dream that there was a lot of different stuff going on underneath, but I'm not going to get into that right now. But at the end of the dream, I was asked, before I could leave the dream, I had a talk of the six worst things that ever happened to me. And you would think that's horrible, but I sat there thinking, well, I don't know what the six worst things that ever happened to me were. I mean, a couple of things came to mind, but in almost every case, I'd say, but on the other side of that, were good things. You know, like it was bad at the time, but then afterwards it was progress, it was growth, it was all this other stuff. So were they really the worst things that happened to me if in the end they actually promoted growth and knowledge? Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem with the fundamentalist Christian model, right? I mean, the fact that, like, people can be made better by having strife in their life and by giving in to temptation, they can actually realize the flip side of that. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The idea that the saints, you know, the those people that are, you know, closer to God, are the ones that are allowed to be tempted by the most powerful demons. I mean, we, you know, those, the common people, you know, we don't really need to be tempted by the devil to do terrible things. We do them or on our own accord, according to this religious interpretation. But someone like, I don't know, Mother Teresa, if you want to see her as a saint, and she was recently canonized by the Catholic Church, you know, you will see her and all the Catholic saints as being, you know, tempted by really, you know, the most powerful, the elite demonical legions, you know, that. So that is the interpretation that is given by religion of why would a benevolent father will allow its creatures to be tempted or be tormented by these demons. And at the same time, you know, Sarai, I think, has a good point, you know, but if it's all for the glory of God, as it would be interpreted by a Catholic, then, you know, in the end, should it be considered, you know, an evil? I mean, the etymological meaning of the word Satan comes from Shaitan, which means like enemy or adversary. Mm-hmm. But you know, adversary could also be, you know, the guy who you are playing against in a match of tennis. So does that mean that tennis is demonic?
That's a very good point.
If your soul is the ball that's being knocked around, yeah, maybe. That's a really good point.
That's my only thing, is that, like, there are very few magical, and from my understanding, because Mike might be able to speak more to this, but, like, from my understanding, there are lots of interpretations that the devil isn't evil. There are lots of interpretations that Lucifer is not evil. But pretty much all the Satan interpretations are that Satan is evil. And that's at least my understanding. Because even if you look at, like, the modern Satanist church, it's not really a Satanist church. It's a secular humanist sort of organization.
Well, that's
from what I understand, a lot of... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
But that's just used as, you know, Satan was the ideal that was used as opposition to the church's norm, which was felt to be corrupt.
Yeah, it's a placeholder. But I guess what I'm getting at is I don't want to deny the fact that I think there is such a thing as absolute evil in some sense in the universe.
Hmm.
Am I alone in that? Sorry. Sorry.
I don't know. It's something that I've been thinking about, I mean, since forever, you know. Like, for example, Mike's horrible experience, you know, during this sleep paralysis encounter. I mean, if that entity had been 100% evil, well, we wouldn't be talking with him tonight, would we?
Maybe.
That's true. So maybe not evil entities, but, like, I think that evil exists in some sort of abstract form. I guess is what I should have said.
The problem is that evil is a moral concept, and moral is, well, whether we like it or not, is subjective. Like, 200 years ago, slavery wasn't considered to be evil.
Right.
So, I don't know. Demons. I mean, great question. You know, it's forcing us to go and revise all of these concepts and to force us to see that we really don't know what's going on.
Well, I mean, even in nature, I mean, what's you know, we look at a cat, and a cat's a lovable, cute little creature, but not to the mouse. To the mouse the cat is hunting, that's the devil right there, you know?
Cats are actually one of the most destructive invasive species on wildlife, too. You know?
Really?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, to birds. Yeah, they're really, really...
Or to humans, if they are pumas.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they're beautiful animals. I mean...
speaking of... I'm not sure about the... absolute evil, but I do lean in that direction sometimes. Have any of you guys read M. Scott Peck's books? You know, he wrote The Road Less Traveled, but he also wrote, interestingly enough, a book on exorcism. He performed exorcisms as a trained psychologist, but also as a minister, I guess, very much from the Christian viewpoint. Fascinating stories. Can't remember the name of it right off the top of my head, but Soraya, maybe you could throw it in the show notes or something.
Glimpses of the Devil.
Yes, that's the one. Fascinating book, and some accounts in there that are just truly chilling. And the other anecdote that I can never shake is the psychedelic researcher Stan Grof, who was did a lot of research with LSD and psilocybin starting in the 50s in Czechoslovakia. And he had an experience where, and these were mostly patients with mental illness and things like that. Not all of them, but some were. And he describes a woman whose face literally changed. Like it completely morphed into a different looking face. And now he's not on the drug, you know, he's not taking LSD.
Right.
He's a legitimate
woman.
Scientist.
It's a subject that is. He's looking at this woman and her face dramatically changed to the point where it freaked him out. And she projected this really evil, demonic expression, the way she talked. And I can't remember if she actually assaulted him physically or something like that, but he said it completely changed his conceptions of reality and in particular the reality of some kind of demonic force that can either emerge from a person or come into a person and take them over. And the other, you guys can look this up too. There's a video of a voodoo ceremony by Maya Deren, who was a filmmaker who was the first to really film Haitian voodoo ceremonies. And there's a scene of a woman who, as the Loa is riding her, the spirit is riding her, you just look at her face, and it's the most fascinating and chilling transformation as well. And I've seen other films of these types of ceremonies where people invite a spirit in to ride them or to take them over temporarily. And it's amazing. I mean, just from a standpoint of an aesthetic perspective of watching this transformation take place, it is chilling, fascinating, and it's hard to watch something like that and say, oh, that's just, they're just faking this, or they're just doing it. Something real is happening, whether or not it's a discarnate entity coming into them, or whether they're making this happen. But it's a crazy transformation.
Well,
I've got to look that up.
Also, when you look at research that's been done on people with multiple personalities, you find that sometimes people can change things like eye color and other things that shouldn't normally be able to be changed. That affect their actual appearance just by shifting internal personalities, which are all them.
Yeah.
I never heard that. That's really interesting.
Yeah, people who need to use corrective lenses when they are under the influence of a different personality, they may not need to use lenses.
Right-handed people become left-handed and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
But so I'm really fascinated by this idea of whether or not some sort of objective evil exists. Can we maybe sort of loosen the bolts on that a little bit? There are forces that are at best ambiguous about the well-being of humanity and human beings.
Oh,
maybe
certainly.
maybe that's a better way to put it. Or at worst, perhaps wish to inflict harm upon human beings. Is that a more nuanced way of sort of framing that sort of evil?
Well, idea? I mean, isn't that kind of the concept behind a lot of Lovecraft stuff? That, you know, there was the old ones who once roamed this planet but were banished by the elder gods, and they hate humanity and want to destroy them and have their home back.
Or they're just
it's at best indifferent. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Completely indifferent to us.
We're as inconsequential. Universe. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. An indifferent universe to me is far more terrifying than a universe that filled with entities that hate us. Because hate is just the other coin, you know, the other side of the coin of love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're saying it'd be okay if Cthulhu loved you?
No, I think that, you know, that a God that created me and really didn't care about me, you know, I think it will be, to me, more evil than a God that will let demons, you know, run amok in its universe. I don't know.
I guess part of the reason that I feel like there is some sort of something edging towards objective evil is because you hear stories very commonly from near-death experiencers that place emphasis on love. And if love and hate or evil exist opposite ends of a spectrum, then it implies that, like, because I'm inclined to believe a lot of near-death experiences. So if that exists, if the message of those is love, then there must be something on the opposite spectrum that is deliberately malignant.
But is the opposite of love evil?
Yeah.
Or is it just disconnection? Like, because love is kind of that unity. So the idea is people come back from near-death experiences with a feeling of interconnection with others and with the world around them, as opposed to that sort of separate
numbness.
Feeling, that numbness, that depression that you get from being separated from the world around you, feeling like you don't belong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's not forget, too, that the people have very hellish near-death experiences, too. Yeah, it's a subset of the larger happy, you know, hey, there's Uncle Joe near-death experiences. But there are definitely people that have hellish near-death experiences. So
that's correct.
Yeah. So let's not, you know, if we add them into the equation, that makes me a little more inclined to believe that maybe there are sort of classical demons. And if the spirit world is an ecology like our world, let's say, of human beings, there sure are some evil people out there, you know, the BTK killer or Hitler, the obvious people. Or
even just predators, you know?
Sure, sure. So, if something gets off on people being terrified, if something gets off on causing fear, hurting, certainly people do that. So why wouldn't there be spirits that get off on that same kind of aberrant behavior?
Fair.
I
don't know.
Would you think that evil is in opposition of harmony, that love brings harmony, And evil brings chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you were talking about seeing the spiritual world as an ecology.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that, you know, there are so many different ways of envisioning the natural world. You know, there is the materialist Darwinian way of seeing the world as, you know, of nature as seen as a constant battle, you know, tooth against claw, and seeing everything as in opposition, you know, in competition, or this the other way of seeing nature as a symbiosis, as everything in harmony, you know, even if there is, you know, the predator with the prey and the predator dying and becoming the food of future animals that will become the prey of other predators and so on and so forth. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we humans are just not capable of seeing the big picture, and that's why we are, in our limited perception, we are so quick to put these labels and say, this is evil, this is good. And, you know, maybe entities that can look far ahead and say, oh my God, these children, you know. I mean, a child who is denied of seeing his favorite TV program, you know, and say, oh, my parents are so evil, they hate me, right, you know. I don't know. I mean, this is a fascinating topic, you know, because it really forces you to try to expand your idea of reality and perception.
Well, it does what all good 14 topics do, is it makes you start to ask big questions. You know, I'm always fond of what Mike Cleland said a while back, which was like, if you start talking to people about the UFO phenomena and the abduction experiencer phenomena, and you don't get into the big questions within like 10 minutes, you're talking to the wrong people. that's totally the thing. But I kind of would like to sort of circle this back around to like the original question was like basically like depiction in media, right?
Was part of it, yes.
Okay, yeah. So I'd like to ask, do y'all think that there is, I mean, do you think that the depiction in media tends to be more or less lenient on how easy it is to get rid of certain demonic phenomena? Like, does it seem like, oh, you just do this and it's gone? Does that seem more lenient in terms of actual reality, or does it seem like it's probably easier to get rid of these things than media would have you suggest?
I think it depends on what it is. You know, look at most ghost hunting shows, and they come in, they don't really do anything, but they got rid of the demons.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Or they burn some frankincense and it's all gone now.
Yeah, they have a medium come in and show the spirits the way out.
Well, in cinema, you need a figure of authority. You need the exorcist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You need the priest. You need the guy with the holy water. And the guy with the booming balls who can say, the power of Christ compels you.
Yeah,
otherwise,
but
the demon won't go.
But there's a difference between like having an authority figure doing that and making it look easy. Like, there are certain exorcist films which have made it look easy and which have not made it look easy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, exorcism films are not exactly my favorite genre. There are plenty of them. But, I think about like the exorcism of like Emily Rose, which I believe was based on a true story, Soraya.
Yeah.
That seemed to be a more realistic version of like a long-form experience. Sort of reminds me of like you can't kick heroin in a day. Like, you might have relapse, and you might, like, it's going to be a process.
Sure.
But a lot of films that you see and a lot of media that you see tend to suggest that there's like a moment before you're possessed and a moment after you're possessed, as opposed to it being represented on a continuum.
Not only that, but people who are possessed often show signs of mental illness. That doesn't mean there's not something else going on that could be supernatural. But
right, am I even more vulnerable? Yeah.
Yeah. And so go on.
Oh, I was just going to say that's the beauty of The Exorcist, which is one of my favorite films. And especially William Peter Blatty's book is tackles it even better. There's a tension in the book between whether Reagan is mentally ill or whether it's supernatural, and it's handled so beautifully. In the film, it becomes rather obvious after she goes through the medical tests and things like that, when they're really crazy, you know, the levitation and the green vomit, you know, pea soup vomit and all that sort of thing, and her head turning backwards. Clearly at that point, it's a demon. She has a Pazuzu, you know, in her. But in the book, it really keeps you off balance, and it's beautifully manipulates you to thinking, well, maybe it is just mental illness, maybe there's something else going on, and oh damn, it's a demon. And sure. I think that's a really interesting tension, and the best movies, you know, do that sort of thing. But I actually believe that most films, when it comes to dealing with demons and exorcism, they make it look very difficult. I mean, if you look at The Exorcist as a classic example, it takes Father Karras taking the demon into him and dying in order to get it out of the girl. It's not a matter of the power of Christ compels you. It's yeah. The priest giving his life, you know, in a very Christian, you know, sort of idealistic way to take the demon out of the girl. And then at the very end, it's a beautiful scene. And this movie drove people back to the church in hordes mm-hmm. when it came out. At the very end, Reagan looks over at one of the Jesuits, and she goes up and kisses him on the cheek or something. It's a really powerful moment. So it does, it makes it seem very difficult. And a lot of the exorcism movies I've seen do sort of, they don't make it seem like a simple process. And I believe that's echoed in the occult world too. If you talk to occultists who talk about banishing something negative from a place, they're very serious about it. It's not something you just go in and burn your incense and do your lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, and suddenly everything's okay. Most occultists are very, when they talk about any sort of malign entity, that, you know, they stress the danger of it. And whether that's informed by Catholicism and the exorcism there, I have no idea. But it seems to me like most popular media says, whoa, be careful, because these things are hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Joshua. I mean, Mike, I also love the movie, The Exorcist, also the book, and you're right. I mean, to me, the beauty of the whole story is the fact that Damien Karras, and this is something that people often forget, was suffering from a loss of faith. You know, he was going through a spiritual struggle because his mother had died, and he was questioning God and all. He was really thinking about quitting the church, but then he comes across this event, and he at first goes, investigates it as a psychiatrist, because he's a trained psychiatrist. And interestingly enough, the first psychiatrist that Regan's mother comes to see, they actually suggest her to try an exorcist, you know. So that's mm-hmm. another interesting twist. But yeah, in the end, it's so interesting and so beautiful how in the end Damien Karras recovers his faith, but by witnessing the power of the devil, you know, like mm-hmm. you know, going through hell in order to reach heaven. You know, it's almost like the teachings of Meister Eckhart, how, you know, these demons mm-hmm. are clawing you, are driving you to hell because you are not ready to face the truth. The moment that you face the truth and you accept it, the demons become angels that take you to heaven.
Mm. Which sounds very much like another one of my favorite films, Jacob's Ladder.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, Mike, you know, we need to make another podcast just about that.
We do. But well, that, well, I mean, well, talk we... about angels being, demons funneling you, burning you, you know, burning the crud off your soul.
Right.
Exactly.
So you can go to heaven,
mm-hmm.
which is another example of how the weird way we think of these things. We think of them as, you know, we're terrified of them, but as we've been discussing, they also seem to help us to evolve.
Well, that goes back to the beginning where I said, you know, I mean, depending on the how big of a picture you look at, you know, is it really evil?
And sort of circling back to the difficulty thing, I think it's easy, especially with like cinematic media, to confuse difficulty with dramatic. Like, I think things can be difficult but not dramatic, and those don't really translate well to the screen. But from what I understand about anything sort of magical, spiritual, possession-related, is that it's serious, but it's a little bit more like computer technology, where it's like, well, have you tried this? Okay, well, that doesn't work. You tried this? Well, that doesn't work. You tried this? Well, that doesn't work. Well, I tried this, and it finally worked. You know, it's a lot more like that, which doesn't really dramatize itself in a lot of films in the way you want it to. If that interpretation is something, like, if anybody else feels like that resonates with what they know, like, back me up. Because, like, that's my take, is that it's serious, but it's like it's a lot more like a lot of like trial and error, because this is not, it's more of an art than a science, the removal of supernatural forces.
Yeah, I could see the church, obviously. I even have the rite of exorcism. A Jesuit friend of mine had an old book that had the rite of exorcism. So if you guys ever need me to come over and banish a demon out of your soul by the power of Christ and the Catholic Church, I have the actual, I can read along at least.
Well, here's...
But yeah, the church very much has their plan. They have their way of doing it, time tested. Obviously, literally by the book is how you do an exorcism. But Josh, I think you're right when it comes to other more eclectic or occult traditions, that it is more of a kind of feeling your way around, and because it's not your idea of the demon isn't so clear cut as this is a demon sent right. by Satan, so the power of Jesus is going to get rid of it. Well, if you're working with an entity that it predates Christianity, maybe as an occultist trying to banish something or get rid of something or limit its influence in someone's life, it's not going to respond. It might laugh at the name of Jesus, because it goes back to the Babylonian times or something.
But here's the thing. How much of this, the supposed demon's identity, comes from the belief system of the people interacting with it?
Sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it can be sort of something that we don't understand, but we're putting its identity on it. It's kind of like a ghost could be a wandering, piece of consciousness. But when people start going, no, it's the spirit of this dead person, it then assumes the spirit of that dead person.
Right.
It mimics.
How much does our belief feed this thing and reconstitute it or change it to reflect back? Just like we talk about the UFO experience, and the show with Greg Bishop in particular, he's saying, this thing is modeling itself off what we think it might be. So if you're an evangelical Christian and something gets in you, maybe it's going to act like a traditional anti-Christian demon.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe if you're in a different culture somewhere else in the world, it's understood in a different way. Maybe that's how it acts. Maybe it adapts itself.
Well, which is why in cases where people find out something that exists outside their current framework are so compelling, like, which is where it's completely hypothetical, but like an evangelical Christian feels that they're possessed and they discover some sort of, they start writing like ancient Sumerian text. Like that's outside of your purview. That's not even in the Christian narrative, but that is something that obviously must be coming from an objective other, which I think also to sort of bring us into some deeper themes, rules against the idea that that supernatural events are our higher selves. Like it suggests that there is something exterior to what we are drawing upon.
what if Satan is a very ancient spirit that suffers from Alzheimer's disease? And they keep telling him, yeah, you're the devil. And say, well, yeah, well, maybe I am.
Damn kids, get off my magma field.
Now, the other aspect in the media other than movies that you see demons mentioned a lot, of course, is the various ghost hunting shows. And they have so propped up this idea that, you know, oh, it's done this, it must be demonic. You know, got three scratches, it's evil. You know,
it's evil.
They jump to such quick conclusions just to, you know, spike up their ratings.
Yeah, it's late.
There was a horrible one on Paranormal State. I've only watched a couple Paranormal State episodes, and I really hated them. But there was one where the woman clearly had some psychological issues, and they were treating it as a possession. And at that point, it's just downright dangerous, because they were putting this woman's life in danger. And whether they believed it was a possession or not, that should not be the first thing you go to. It should be, right. Let's take this person in and have them talk to a therapist, see if we can figure out what's going on.
Right. That's why we walk a dangerous line. This is a really dangerous subject, and that it fascinates me because of that, obviously, being the weirdo that I am. But there are people that die from exorcisms.
You
read about these cases all the time. You read about people being slaughtered, you know, because they're albino in some country in Africa, or witches. I mean, there was just a witch, the woman burned for being a witch in Peru, I believe, just this week. So that's what is this crazy razor's edge that I see when you talk about this stuff. Like if you fuel the idea that entities can possess people, and I kind of lean in that direction.
Sure.
Then, you know, how careful do we have to be to say, but you can't make that assumption. You can't burn someone, you know, please have them checked out by a competent mental health professional, because people die. It's this weird belief that if you believe it, you also have to be ready to condemn people who believe it but take it too far.
I mean, we're talking about evil, and I agree with Mahatma Gandhi when he said that subjecting people to poverty, that to me is the greatest evil in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the indifference of people in the highest echelons of society, you know, people in corporations who have no moral qualms whatsoever of firing their employees and letting them, you know, deal with the problems of trying to raise kids with minimum wage, which is not even, you know, necessary. You know, it doesn't really meet what you need to try to get by on a day-to-day basis. That to me is more evil that, I don't know, you know, that a demon, you know, like spewing serpents out of a poor girl's mouth, that the kind of accounts that you hear in exorcisms, you know, that these all these ghost hunting is stuff. You know, that to me is the real evil in the world.
That's a great point. Yeah,
I don't know.
That's a great point. All yeah. Right. Do we exercise Wall Street? The way that, you know, hopefully, the hippies tried to levitate the Pentagon, you know, and did a ritual with that. It's absolutely. I mean, evil can live in a very nice penthouse in Manhattan.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time, so why don't we get some last thoughts on this? And it feels like this is a subject we can probably take another twist and come back at on a future show as well. So let's get final thoughts, Mike.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from readers or listener readers. That's my writer persona kicking in. I'd love to hear from listeners about this topic. It is a fascinating topic. We have such great smart people listening to this show that I would love to hear their feedback. For me, as someone who writes about this stuff, it is endlessly fascinating. It's, you know, to me, supernatural, demonic stuff is more terrifying than banal human evil. There's just something so mythic about it. There's something so that has always attracted me. And why is that? I don't know. You know, are we sort of looking inside at ourselves when we think about this stuff? Maybe. If there is an ecology of spirits that we interact with, are some of them bad guys? Do they do bad things? Do they like to hurt people? I don't know, but it's a tremendously fascinating subject, and I can't get enough of it. So I'd love to hear what some of the listeners think. And I've really enjoyed this particular conversation quite a bit.
Joshua?
Yeah, well, I would say I think this topic definitely deserves a lot more conversation, a lot more thought. I would ask everyone to sort of look introspectively at their own actions and think about whether or not they reflect their own choices or the choices of something that seems like it's exterior. To sort of talk about what you were talking about earlier with what you were experiencing, Soraya, you know, right, that sort of tug. Because I have a feeling like whatever this other demonic, non-demonic intelligence is, I feel like there's something out there in the ether in a spiritual component that does tug us in different directions. I'm as guilty of that as anybody else, but I feel like there are certain things. I don't feel like we're always, as much as I like to think that we have free will, I think that we have free but influenced will. I think that the narrative of the angel and the demon on our shoulders is more accurate than we would like to suspect. And so that's where I would really leave it. But at the same time, don't be afraid and don't be scared off of engaging with and talking about these topics. You know, you'll find some people who are evangelical in nature who will say, don't even talk about this, don't even engage in this. But I think that is sort of a... That's just a ridiculously repressive idea. Like, you should be able to engage in this because, you know, in order to know the enemy, know yourself. So that'll be my takeaway.
And mm-hmm. Red pill?
Well, one of the things that I've heard time and time again about people who have tried the ayahuasca potion from the Amazons is that the vine forces you to see whatever actions you have committed in life and the repercussions it has had in the lives of other people from their perspective, right? For better or for worse, it forces you to see that. So at the end of the day, yeah, I'm very open to the possibility that they are negative entities out there, you know, living among us, and we are unaware of it, and then maybe they prey on us the way that we prey on other species. But the thing that scares me the most is that, you know, I may wake up some morning and I may look at in the mirror and I may really take a hard look at myself, and I may realize that I'm just one of the demons hunting this world, you know, that I'm part of the problem instead of being part of the solution. So, you know, try to live your life in harmony, you know, and maybe by doing that, you know, we may not be so scared of those demons that are hunting us after all.
Perfect. All right, and now to take you out, we are going to hear some One-Eyed Doll. And this is a band I've done a bunch of stuff with on my other show, The Last Exit for the Lost. And in interviewing them this last weekend, or last weekend? Yeah, last weekend. I got one creepy story from them about recording a particular song, which you can find on our YouTube in video form, and it'll also be up on the page for those of you on iTunes and such. And they have a bunch more. We're gonna do a bit more on that later. But they have an album called Witches. It's a concept album about Salem, and it's excellent. So we're gonna hear a song that they also have a video for. This is Afflicted, and if you would like to contribute your music to be a potential outro music on Where Did the Road Go, it's contact at wheredidtheroadgo.com, and yeah, we'll probably use it at some point to take you out of the show. But for now, One-Eyed Doll, Afflicted.